Welcome to Frankly Speaking, a public service program of George Mason University, the state university in Northern Virginia. I'm Michelle Lassay Montgomery, and today we're going to talk about an explosion, the George Mason University Arts Explosion, that begins October 13th and continues through November 14th. My guests today are two well-known artists, both of whom are faculty members at George Mason. They are musician Stephen Burton and writer Peter Clappard. Both Burton and Clappard are part of the Arts Month along with other performing artists and groups. We're going to talk to them about the creative experience. Stephen Burton is a nationally and internationally acclaimed composer whose works have been performed by such groups as the National Symphony Orchestra, by the Washington Chamber Orchestra, by the American Guild of Organists, and other outstanding musical groups. The piece we're listening to is called Der Auszug, performed by the Louisville Orchestra. Stephen, you've had several Washington premieres in the last year at the Kennedy Center, at the Capitol, and at George Mason University. And yet there's another premiere in store for you on Saturday, October 15th, at the Arts Gala premiere here at the university. Tell me a little bit about the work that's going to be featured.
Well, it's interesting. This is one of those works that originated because of the Arts Gala itself, and I've always been very interested in the 10 years I've been at George Mason in the connection between George Mason and the community and the arts, and I think we're just beginning to realize there's a lot of mutual benefit that can come from that. So when Joanne Johnson asked if I could write a piece for the concert on the gala, I decided that I very much wanted to do that, and she suggested that Ed Matos, who is a former program director at Wolf Trap and an old friend of about 20 years, be asked to perform it. I always enjoy writing a piece for a specific performer, especially someone like Ed, who I've known for a long time and whose playing I admire a great deal. I first knew him when I was a student at Oberlin, in fact, back in the early 60s, and we won't discuss a specific year, of course, and he was absolutely fantastic. I can remember still, even 20 years later, his performance of Beethoven sonatas and so forth. Anyway, Ed and I have run into each other over the years in various capacities when he was at the State Department running the European tours and so forth, and then later when he was at Wolf Trap. And so I jumped at the chance, and Ed was very kind to say that he would perform the piece. And so what I wrote was something rather interesting. I'd been for some time interested in, of course, always interested in different kinds of music, and one kind of music that I've used before in various theater pieces and so forth has been flamenco guitar music. And I had for some time been interested in writing a short piano piece which was utilizing the style of that, so the piano sort of imitates the guitar and so forth. It'd be a sort of flashy virtuoso piece. And Ed, also because of his Portuguese background, was, I guess, hot-blooded enough to be the pianist to play this. So we discussed this, and what I wrote originally was a short, very slow piece in the style of the sort of mournful, soulful flamenco pieces. And Ed received it, and he said, well, I like it very much, but it really needs something else. And he said, what you need is to have a great big fast section at the end, like they always do, too. And I thought about that, and I decided, well, he was absolutely right. So I wrote him a great big flashy virtuoso fast section at the end. And it turned out that that was really what the piece should have been in the first place. So he knew more about how to write it than I did in that case. And I'm very satisfied with it. It's a very difficult piece, but I have no fear that Ed will surmount those technical difficulties as he always has and can pull off a stellar and exciting performance.
Stephen, tell me briefly, what's behind the concept of the George Mason Arts Explosion, and what is it going to mean to the Northern Virginia community?
Well, I think that for some time, of course, we've been doing various things that are an attempt to become more a part of the community and so forth in the arts, and I think that this is certainly the largest scale attempt we've made on that basis. We're bringing in people from the community and outside. We're of course making these events available at a very minimal charge for people, and we hope that the community will be interested in coming and seeing them, not only what we ourselves are putting on, our own faculty, but also the outside people that will be involved in this as well. And it should be, it's not just meant to be some stuffy concerts or something. It's a series of activities that involve many things that people can come to, and I hope the atmosphere will really be a gala atmosphere. It'll be more like a carnival, I hope, than anything else, where everyone just enjoys themselves and has a good time, and in the process gets to know a little bit about what's available in the arts in this area.
Well, I'm looking forward to the month.
Well, I am very much too.
Thank you, Stephen, for being on Frankly Speaking.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Thank you, Michelle.
Peter Clappert's poems are pretty visual. In fact, they've even been made the themes of paintings. Clappert, along with fellow writer Richard Bausch, will be featured in a reading during the Arts Explosion Month. Here's a preview.
This poem is called The Invention of the Telephone. The time it took, he could have crawled. On the hairs of his knuckles, on his eyelids, on his teeth. He could have chewed his way. In a place without friction, he could have reinvented the wheel. But he wanted you to be proud of him. So he invented the telephone before he called. The second poem has an epigraph. I was reading George Orwell's Homage to Catalonia at the time I went for the walk that led to this poem. And so the epigraph from Orwell is, "This is not war," he used to say. "It is a comic opera with an occasional death." And the poem is called Movement. Down the dark street through a wound in the wall, we go clutching stones with our throats in pursuit. This is the bottom of the well. Try again. This time, use both of your wings. We go in flight through a bandage of newspaper, up the dark stairs. At the top of the light, we forget to inhale. Try again. This time, your claws and your beak.
Peter, I'm struck by some of the themes in your poems. And in fact, as I mentioned in my intro, that they're so visual. Do you work at making your poems as so visual?
I have to know what I'm seeing before I can start writing. The details may not come up in the poem. But if I'm writing a poem that takes place in a specific room, then I have to know where the furniture is and what's on the walls and what time of day it is and things of that nature. I make those decisions consciously or unconsciously, though there may be no references to any of those things in the poems themselves.
Is creating difficult for you?
Sometimes it's difficult and sometimes it's spontaneous. That little poem, Movement, for example, I went out for a walk on a cold night one December, and the poem just started coming to me. I didn't bring a pencil with me or a piece of paper, so I kept storing it up in my head, and when I got back to my apartment, I wrote it down, and I looked at it, and I thought, that doesn't make any sense at all. And about 3 or 4 days later, I came across it, and it stayed pretty much the way I'd written it. At the time I said it or wrote it, I couldn't recognize what it was saying. But it made perfectly good sense to me later. That's sort of the way I like to work.
That's the way you like to work, huh? I've been struck at some of the titles of your books of poetry, and I'll name a few of the books. Lugging Vegetables to Nantucket, Circular Stairs, Distress in the Mirrors, and there's one book that I assume is coming out within the next year, The Idiot Princess of the Last Dynasty. How did you arrive at that title?
I don't remember how I arrived at that one. I think I was describing a painter friend of mine to someone else, trying to capture that sense of silliness that she was capable of in conversation and so forth. And I said, well, she's sort of the idiot princess of the last dynasty. And if I recall correctly, sort of liked the line, so I wrote it down and waited for a chance to use it. Titles, after all, are bait. They just have to get you going. With the first book, I wrote four or five titles I was thinking of on an index card and simply showed the card to friends. I said, if you were in a bookstore, which book would you pick up first? And Lugging Vegetables to Nantucket was the winner, so that's what the book ended up being called.
And so is that the procedure that you now use for
naming? No, frequently it'll be a line from a poem. There's another book coming out next year which has, I guess, the strangest title of all, and that's called 52 Pickup Scenes from the Conspiracy, a documentary.
Tell me a little bit about that book. What can readers expect to find?
In that poem?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. That's about the least accessible in the sense of being easy to grasp. You know, most people come to poetry being mainly concerned with understanding what they're reading. And I think that's a mistake. The main thing one wants to get out of a poem is experience of language, experience of what's being described, what's happening. But if the experience is good, I'll keep coming back to a poem and wait for the understanding to reach me. I'm not in any hurry to understand something. 52 Pickup is in the form of a documentary film script. It's in two columns, sound and picture. But the instructions for the visual part couldn't be photographed, and the soundtrack that's described couldn't be recorded. One of the instructions for the soundtrack, for example, is for newt music.
What's that?
Well, newts are these little amphibians, like a salamander that lives in the water all its life. They don't make any noise. So,
Well, how did you arrive at newt music?
I just liked the way it sounded.
In addition to literary readings and musical concerts held throughout the month, there will be art exhibits featuring the Phillips Collection and an exhibit from the Virginia Museum Artmobile entitled Interiors, Exteriors. Here is a rundown on some of the other events. On Saturday, October 15th at 8 p.m., the GMU Arts Gala premiere featuring dance, music, and segments from the forthcoming play Brecht on Brecht. On Sunday, October 16th at 8 p.m., a Canadian Film Festival. And on Monday, October 17th, the U.S. Air Force Band and the Singing Sergeant. The concert starts at 8 o'clock. GMU English professor and film critic Peter Brunette speaks on structuralism and the arts on Tuesday, October 18th at 8 p.m. And on Wednesday, October 19th, the GMU Symphonic Winds will be featured in a concert at 8 p.m. Careers in the fine and performing arts will be the topic of an afternoon workshop that will be held from noon to 5 p.m. on Friday, October 21st. Later that same night, the Northern Virginia Symphonic Chorus and the GMU Chamber Orchestra will be featured in a concert at 8 p.m. And on Saturday, October 22nd at 8 p.m., a gospel concert featuring the Mount Pleasant Evangelical Outreach Choir of Alexandria, Virginia. For more information concerning the GMU Arts Explosion, please call 323-2138. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program of George Mason University, the State University in Northern Virginia. I'm Michelle Lassay Montgomery, and my engineer today has been Donna Ambrosiano. Next week, in celebration of Adult Continuing Education Week, we'll be talking to GMU professor Ed Jones. Thank you for listening.